I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, it's Saturday. We're recording a podcast. It's your cheat day, I believe, still.
It is.
Any big plans tonight for, like, super glazed Krispy Kreme donuts with a beer? Or, like, what are you planning?
Well, right now, I just before we started recording today, I had a half of a raisin scone. And I had, with, like, half a stick of butter on it. That's key.
And salted or unsalted butter?
Good question. Usually salted, I think.
Okay, yeah.
And I had a Morning Glory muffin, which is Morning Glory is kind of like a carrot cakey kind of thing. It's like very spicy and oily, and there's like raisins and all that kind of stuff in it. So that's my go-to. It's funny because I often go to this one bakery that's really good, and I haven't gone in a while. I've been on the pancakes kick for the past month or so, but today I was in the mood for that bakery. So that's where I started, and I'm not sure where we'll be today. I'm sure some beer will be had at some point. There's like a beer food truck music festival not far from me today. So when we're done recording, it is likely that we will head out there, and I will probably have a beer, and we will probably watch some music. So that's about it for today. I've actually been scaling my cheat days back a bit over the past year or so. Like, I still have some good stuff, but I used to go really at it, and I used to really binge, and I don't really binge anymore because then my whole Sunday was ruined because I would just be, I never got sick. Like, I never threw up or anything like that, but I would have like a food hangover, you know, in addition to like a hangover, because I'd have a lot of beer and I'd have like a lot of food, and then I'd be useless on Sunday. And I'm like, well, I don't want to be useless on Sunday. So I still have my treats, but I'm a little more practical about it. So
there's a place here. It's over by Park Meadows. It's called Rock Bottom Brewery. Mm. They have mason jar desserts.
Ooh, interesting.
And they're small. They're not like a big mason jar. There's like a tiny, it's almost like the size of one of those candles that you would buy at a store that comes in the little jar. And they had a bourbon pecan pudding dessert flambé thing.
Okay.
With ice cream.
Yeah.
In a mason jar.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
I have to say this, it's funny because I do this cheat day and I realize I will frequently like post things that I eat on cheat day. So I am as guilty of this as anybody. And we've talked about posting about your food and how we're all kind of okay with it at this point. But I feel like, boy, there's a lot of just, we almost look at eating as an extreme sport these days. It's like, what's the most ridiculous thing that we can put together and eat it? Like, I just feel like that's a lot of what I see on Facebook. And like I said, I'm a total hypocrite because I do it on Saturday too. I'm like a monk, 6 days a week, you know. But on Saturday I let it go. But it's like, wow. Can't be eating that way every day, everybody. You're gonna kill yourself. Come on. And I'm sure people don't eat that way every day.
The foodie culture, right? Foodie culture has become a thing.
It sure has. It sure has.
Yeah.
No, it is.
I do it.
No, and it's cool. Like, look, hey, I partake in that culture every Saturday. I think a lot of it is just kind of enjoying it rather. If you're going to enjoy your food, like really enjoy it. Don't just eat a bunch of crap that, you know, that's just whatever. Like, don't just eat a bunch of crackers, like taking all these like calories and not even really enjoy it. Like, if you're going to eat, like eat, enjoy it, live, all that kind of good stuff.
Well, as an example, last night I made yellow rice.
Okay.
And a baked chicken breast or baked chicken breasts. Mm-hmm. And I basically took wheat pitas, cut them in half, filled them with some hummus, some feta, yellow rice, chicken, and tzatziki, and called it Greek tacos.
That sounds great.
And my mom loved it.
Did you come up with that on your own or did you find a recipe?
I did. Cool. No, I just thought about it. I was like, man, I would really, I used to love the, there was like two Mediterranean places and then a third one showed up near work. And one is the big chain called Garbanzo. Mm-hmm. And their quality has gone into the shitter. Mm. I mean, they just, you can tell they just don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped going there. And I started going to a place called Saj, and I believe they're also a chain. I don't think they're as big, and they were much more into the quality, and they had a lot more variety. But they're also further away from the office now since we moved the office at work. Mm-hmm. So then there was a place called Fire Dough Cafe, and that was just a mom-and-pop place, and I loved that place. That place went out of business. Saj, the one that was a little bit further away, went out. Which leaves me with Garbanzo, and they suck. Mm. So I've been craving some Mediterranean / Greek food. Mm-hmm. And there's nowhere near my office or my house where I can get it. So I was just thinking about it. And I was like, I bet I can recreate that somehow myself. And I went to King Soopers, and I just started like shopping around, which I hate to do anyway. I hate to wander and meander. But I did that anyway. And I got all these ingredients. I brought them home. I cooked them. I made them. And put it all together, called it a Greek taco, and my mom, who's very finicky and picky, scarfed it.
Nice.
So it was, I enjoyed it too. It was really good. Really good.
Yeah. Well, it was.
So yeah, I just basically put it together in my head and said, this is what I'm going to do. And that's what I did.
Yeah. You know what I loved about our starting this episode today is that For people who listen to our Just the Two of Us episodes, we often talk about how we don't have much of a plan. But usually we at least check in and be like, what are we going to talk about? Well, maybe this or that. Didn't even do that today. Just Patrick hit record, and now we're talking about Greek tacos. There you go.
Well, and it was fun. I mean, I enjoy cooking quite a bit, yeah. And I don't always get to do it. But it's one of those, it's almost like a stress reliever. It's like you just get to create. It's a different way of creating.
Mm. Yeah.
So I enjoy doing that, and you know, it's funny because I got to have dinner recently with Gail Carriger, and Gail is a listener of the show, mm-hmm. and she was telling me how she checks out when we talk about Star Wars.
Nice.
She checks out.
Oh, she checks out. Oh no, not nice. Come on, Gail.
No, she checks out because she's like, that's not my fandom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we do talk quite a bit about Star Wars, and so I don't know. I guess it was in the back of my head that I was just going to talk about something else for a little while.
Yeah, no. Well, it's there's been a lot of Star Wars stuff lately, so we've kind of chimed in on it. But you know what I did want to ask you is, you know, because we haven't talked about it much, I don't know how much time you have, and I don't know if you're kind of still doing mostly the audiobook thing, but. What have you been reading lately? Because I feel like I haven't heard you pick a book in a while. I'm sure you have, but I feel like you get kind of lost in series sometimes, and you'll kind of like binge a whole series of books one after the other. So where are you at in your reading or listening these days?
So it's funny, Audible a couple of weeks ago, as this episode's going live, had a sale.
Oh, they sure did. Please tell me your experience with it, and I'll take it.
I spent about $60.
Okay. Seems about right.
And bought a ton of stuff. But to answer your question, so I haven't started any of that yet.
Okay.
But to answer your question, I have been on a reread of the Dresden Files.
Oh, okay. Sure. So our conversation with Butcher from a few months ago, kind of a reread. There you go.
Well, I had already started before that.
Okay.
But I've just kept with it now, and I'm on Deadbeat.
Okay.
So when he was talking about his first hardcover, I believe that's Deadbeat.
Okay.
And so he had already introduced Butters previously, the medical examiner. And in Deadbeat, he brings Butters back to be the character that's asking all kinds of questions and kind of getting his feet wet with the supernatural world that kind of surrounds Chicago. And so that's what this episode's all about. And there's lots of other things going on in this episode, in this part of the series, this book in the series. Mm. So there's necromancers running around Chicago. They have proven themselves to be far more powerful than Harry, and he's pretty scared. that they're going to kick his ass. And he pretty much hates the White Council, which is the Council of Wizards that oversees magic and has the seven laws. And all the seven laws, you break any of them, it's death. And so he's ever since that they kind of judged him, he has not trusted them. He doesn't like them, but he's being forced to call in their help because he can't handle this by himself.
Hmm. Cool.
So I've kind of been going through that. If you'll give me a second, I can tell you some of the books that I bought and the big Audible sale.
Yeah, before you get into, because I will tell you my experience with it is that I had planned on buying some and then I missed the sale. And I'm not that sad that I missed it because I think I have like two credits that I haven't used. I think I probably have 10 to 20 books that I've purchased, like audiobooks that I've purchased on previous sales that I haven't gotten to. So I have at least a backlog of 20 audiobooks to get through anyway. And it was a lot of, they had a lot of books on sale. It had to be like 200 books or so, and good stuff too. Not just, you know, throwaway kind of things. Like a lot of very good, from what I glanced at, it was a lot of the first books in popular series.
Yes. And stuff that had been in my wish list for a while.
Yes.
So Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Oh, I love Dragonflight. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Dragonflight, the first Dan McCaffrey book for Dragon Riders of Pern, Six Wakes for Mer Lafferty, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, The Forever War that Fred Kish is always telling me I need to read, Red Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson, Wizard of Earthsea.
See a lot of classic
that one. Peter Brett's Warden Man.
Oh, that's a great book. That one. That's a great book.
So I've always wanted Carrie Vaughn's book, so I went ahead and got Kitty in the Midnight Hour.
Nice.
The Farseer's Apprentice, or the Farseer Assassins. That's the one.
Right, Robin Hood.
Yep. I think that's it. No, I also got Neverwhere from Neil
Gaiman. Oh, okay, cool. I read that too. That's a good one too.
So even though I've been going through the Dresden Files, I now have a bunch of other stuff that I can also kind of cleanse my palate with and listen to some other books.
Yeah, I ended up restraining myself from that sale because it was a lot of first in series. And as I was probably saying a few months ago on the show, I've read so many first in series books of series that I want to continue reading that I have not. That I'm like, let's not start this game again, where I then read the next 10 books of a first of a series, and then I still have 20 series that I want to read the rest of, so I'd rather kind of finish those up first. So I didn't end up buying a lot of these. And also, quite frankly, the phase I'm in right now, and I'm sure it'll go back the other way, is that I haven't really read much fiction lately. I'm reading much more nonfiction, and my reading was kind of split half and half, and now it's way more towards the nonfiction side. I have so many of these nonfiction books that I want to read where I'm just sort of putting some fiction on the back burner. I also tend to do fiction in audiobook form these days, and in the summer, I don't do as much audio because I don't have as many opportunities. I don't have a consistent opportunity because I'm not commuting to work. I don't have that, ooh, I'm going to have 50 minutes each day, every day to do this. I have been listening to a nonfiction book, which I don't tend to do that because I like to take notes on nonfiction, which you can do with audio, but it's not the best way to do it. Because if you use the Audible app on your phone, there is a bookmark feature, which you can hit. But then you got to go back and transcribe it all. And I just don't know if I'm going to do that. You know, I've done it a couple of times.
Sure.
If you do it where you buy the ebook and it has the whisper sync, when you hit the bookmark, when you're listening to it, it will actually show up as a bookmark in the ebook as well. So then you can kind of scan the text and then sort of highlight it. So I've done that and that's useful, but then that means you have to buy the audiobook and the ebook. And I like doing that, but that can get pricey if you do that with every book you buy. So I tend to not do that, but I'm actually listening to...
And I'm sorry, have you ever done the audio clips?
Yeah, that's what it is. When you bookmark it, it creates an audio clip.
Yeah, and then you can come back to the audio.
Yeah, okay, and then it's good. You could do that. It's just not as, I have a whole system for how I do it with eBooks. But I have been doing a audiobook on the history of jazz, which is very good. And I think that's something I'm going to keep trying when I'm done with this, because with history books, I don't know if I would take a lot of notes on a history book. Like I'm not going to take a test on the history of jazz. And it's kind of a good, if you're going to do nonfiction as audio, history is kind of a good way to go, because if I'm not taking notes, it's just kind of like a nice history lesson that you're getting. So I'm enjoying doing that. But I'm sure once my school year starts back up in a month, or less than a month now, I will get back into listening to some fiction there. But I've been mostly about nonfiction these days. And like I said, I just have so many. Like I have all the Scalzi books on audiobook that I haven't gotten into. So like, that's a whole thing. I know there's the new Timothy Zahn Thrawn book is out. Gail, don't check out. I'm just mentioning a Star Wars book. We're not going to go down. but that's out there, which I'm definitely going to, that's a book that I'm really excited about actually. So I'm sure I will spend one of my credits on that. I think that just came out a couple of weeks ago.
I just read an interview with him where he was kind of talking about the original trilogy that he did and how they kind of brought Thrawn back in mm-hmm. to the new canon, and he's excited about that book. So,
oh yeah,
it looks like it's good.
Yeah, it's supposed to.
He kind of gets to recreate a character that he already created, which is not normal. No. Like you don't usually get to do that.
No. No, not at all. It's interesting. And yeah, I think it's supposed to, because if this is the second new Thrawn book, he already wrote one about a year ago.
Yeah.
And apparently this one is two time periods, one where it's Thrawn pre-Imperial, where he's on a mission with Anakin. And then the other mm-hmm. half is post, when he's in the Empire and on a mission with Vader. So that's a really interesting premise. So I'm definitely curious about that. So is everything you're reading these days audio, or do you read print or ebook at all these days?
It's all audio.
Yeah.
It's all audio. It just has to be. It's just easier for me.
Sure.
Like I'm cleaning the kitchen, I've got my phone going and I'm listening to a book. I'm doing laundry, I've got a phone going, and I'm driving, I'm listening to it on my car. It's just easier. It's just easier. And it's the only way at this point to continue to consume fiction and books at any sort of a steady pace.
It's the greatest thing for reading to me, because I don't know what the percentage of my audio, it's probably at least a third of my reading at this point. But it's great, because that ends up being, that's an extra 15 to 20 books a year that I read that I would not have read otherwise.
Well, yeah, Deadbeat. Is that six? Book six? Book seven?
I don't know. I only read the first two.
Something like that. So, I've just continued, and it's funny because I finished a book and immediately got up and checked, and I had a credit, and I bought the next one and started the next one.
Yeah. Well, I think it really works, especially for a lot of these longer books, because, sometimes especially if you're reading at times of the day where maybe you're not as focused, or maybe you're a little sleepy or something. And if you have these, door stopper fantasy books that are so long and you only have certain opportunities to read, it could take you forever to get through them. Whereas with the audio, and you have it with you, if there's a part that maybe it meanders a little long at a section, you kind of get through it and you get to the good stuff a little quicker. So it's a good medium to ingest this stuff.
Well, and it's really interesting for me, because the performance is so much a part of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm apparently a rare individual in that I listen to audiobooks at regular speed.
Yeah, no, I don't.
A lot of other people listen to them at twice speed. And Gail listens to this podcast, I believe, at twice speed. I'm not 100% sure. So also people are consuming their podcasts at a higher speed. And I tend to listen to everything at normal speed.
Interesting. Well, I would say the good thing about Gail listening to us at twice speed is that we probably seem very quick and witty then. you know, like we're just throwing them out. It's like, wow, Patrick's so witty, and you see how fast he came up with that. It's a I listen to audiobooks at twice speed. Podcasts I listen to at normal speed. I don't speed up my podcasts at all. Here's one thing I have noticed. I did, when I had a big backlog of credits on Audible, you know, I'd considered pausing it, but then I was like, you know what? There's a bunch of these comedy books. I'm like, they're shorter, they're lighter. You know, the problem if you're listening to fiction, I usually listen to it in the car, but I will do it when I'm doing certain chores. But sometimes for certain things, it's not good, because if I have to have any sort of mental energy on the task that I'm doing, then I'll lose my place in the book and I have to end up rewinding. And so fiction doesn't always work for me when I'm doing chores, which is usually when I will listen to podcasts. But I notice like these kind of comedy books are good. They're sort of like one big long podcast is what it comes down to. Now those I do not listen to at twice speed, because comedy is all about timing, right? So if you're just making them go twice as fast, the jokes don't land right. You know, comedy is all about that pause here and there. So I listen to them, the two comedy books that I listened to recently, I think I listened to them at 1.25. So a little bit faster, but not, I was sort of figured out, well, what's the speed I can listen to where the jokes are still landing? So that's what I found out. Yeah, I can't listen to comedy at twice speed. Everything else I can, but not comedy. You lose the whole purpose of listening. Plus the comedy books are short, you know, they're like, I think the longest one I listened to was like 8 hours or 9 hours. The comedy ones are a lot of times like 6 hours. They're shorter books. So, yeah, but that's no. And now how many, in terms of podcasts these days, how many different podcasts do you get?
Not a lot
these days.
Not a lot. Beyond the Trope, for the most part. And then I'll occasionally listen to, you know, the Star Wars thing from Tom. Or I'll grab an episode of Ditch Diggers, or I Should Be Writing, you know, whatever. Like it's very infrequent now. But the only thing I'm steady with is Beyond the Trope.
Cool. Yeah, I have a bunch. I miss like any podcast listener, I miss episodes. And so right now I listen to a bunch of Tom's podcasts. So I still listen to his Star Wars one. I listen to, and when I say Tom, I mean Tom Merritt. I listen to Cord Killers. I still enjoy that every week. That's a good one if you're into the streaming show. We've been on that before. But that's, you know, the good news in that, that realm. I listen to the Star Wars Jedi Council podcast. That's a good one. That's on Collider, and a bunch of music ones. The Eddie Trunk podcast. This guy Mitch LaFon does one. And recently I did a search because I've been really getting into jazz more and more, because that's what I'm kind of working on the bass right now, as I'm learning how to play walking bass lines, which is very difficult and requires a lot of practice. And I like I said, I'm listening to that History of Jazz book right now. And I was like, I bet there's a ton of jazz podcasts. And there are. So I did a search for podcasts on jazz, and I've been checking out a couple of those, and I haven't found one that I love yet, but kind of sampled a few, and there seems to be some pretty good stuff out there. But yeah, podcasts are good for me for when I'm doing something where I can't focus my full attention on what I'm listening to, but I want to have something in the background keeping me company. Podcasts are much better than an audiobook in that instance for me. But usually when I'm in the car, it's a book.
I will say I used to be really into the Geek and Sundry channel on YouTube. And then they started doing a lot of different shows, and kinda there was too much and I didn't know what to watch and I couldn't keep up with it. So I kind of fell off of them. But they have a show that is still kind of good to me, and I like it and watch it. It's called Critical Role.
Okay, I've heard of it.
And this is it's video, but and you can just listen to it as well. But it's a bunch of people who I believe are voice actors.
Oh, okay.
In Hollywood, or wherever Geek and Sundry is, probably L.A. somewhere. And they're playing Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of fun, especially to listen to, because they do all these really great voices for their characters, and they're playing a game, and it's super long. It's like you will have an episode that's 3.5 hours long because they're playing the game. Right. And but that's an interesting one for me. I enjoy that quite a bit. That's kind of fun to listen to.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like you and I have been evangelists for podcasts. I mean, obviously we've been doing this one for a very long time now, but sure. I beat the podcast drum to anybody that'll listen because I'm just like, there's podcasts on everything. Whatever you're into, yeah, you can find it. My wife is now listening to a podcast. She's a psychologist, and she's taking, it's a thing called the BCBA. She's getting her certificate. She has her master's degree, and the BCBA is a sort of an extra certification on top of your master's where it will enable you to, you know, get certain kinds of jobs. It's behavioral analysis, basically. And she has to take this test. Now she went and got her, she did a 2-year coursework on this and had all these supervision hours. So she's been working on this thing for like 3 or 4 years. And at the end of the summer, she's finally going to take this test. But this test is sort of like the bar exam for behavior analysis. Like not everybody passes it on the first time. Some people have to take it 4 or 5 times to pass it. So she's a good test taker, and she like really studies her ass off whenever she has these kinds of things. So she's got all the coursework for it and been going through it, but she's like, do you think there'd be podcasts on this? I'm like, probably. So we like did a search and we found one, and she's like, yeah, well, listen to my podcast and they were talking about this today. And I'm like, see, I told you, like, you could find one on anything. And then of course she wanted to, she's like, oh, there's this audio course where they basically go through the test. It's sort of like an audio study guide for it. I'm like, all right, well, let's get that. And of course, anytime you have a study aid, they really rip you off, because she had like 5 hours of audio, and she said it was very good. She thinks it's really going to help her. But for like 5 hours of audio, it was like $150 or something. It was crazy.
Wow.
But it's like, hey man, if you pass your test the first time, instead of having to take it 3 times, like it'll be worth it, because if you pass it, then you can get a job where you make more money. And like, so yeah, so it's yeah, worth that. That's, they know they got you. That's why they'll charge you. But I'm like, $150. What? But I'm like, I just get it. But no, it's obviously, if you're listening to this, you're someone who listens to podcasts. But I always tell people, I'm like, whatever you're into, go into whatever podcast app you have and just search that subject. And I guarantee you'll find 10 podcasts. Now, a lot of them may not be great, depending on how niche you're going. But yeah, like I found one when I did the jazz search one, where it's this guy's like how to practice jazz, and he puts out like one episode a week, and it's just how you practice playing jazz. And I'm like, perfect. It's like totally what I was looking for. And it's like lessons every week, but it's cool. And it's like, that's a super niche thing. Not everyone's going to listen to that, but someone like me who's looking for it, it was great.
You've been playing bass more and practicing that. Do you remember when Harry Connick Jr. did sort of a jazz fusion pop album?
You said is this like the real weird one that you're talking about?
It's called She.
Okay.
And the title song has this really cool bass riff on it, you know, boom.
Like an upright bass, like a traditional jazz. Okay.
Boom, 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 boom. You might like that song quite a bit because of the way the bass kind of goes through it. Mm-hmm. It's funny because my brother and I went down the rabbit hole not too long ago of what guitars did the Beatles play.
Oh, I have a book about that. I don't know if you have that book, but
no, we just looked it all up on the internet. You know, we were doing quite a bit of searching on it because we were curious. You know, which guitars were they playing on which songs, and which bass guitars was Paul playing, and and so on and so forth. And that's the kind of rabbit hole I think you would ridiculously enjoy.
I think I have it at my job right now. It's probably sitting in the closet in the back of my classroom. But I did buy this one years ago, probably 15 years ago, if not more. And it just goes through every single Beatles song, and it goes through who's playing what and what they're playing. They're like, George is playing a Seafoam Green Stratocaster on this one, on Nowhere Man. And well, you know what I was really surprised about when I read that? And I think if you're a Beatles fan, this is not, you know, groundbreaking news, but how much guitar Paul is playing. on a lot of that stuff. I think Paul's playing the solo on Taxman. I think that's Paul. So he's playing a lot of guitar. He plays drums on a bunch of the songs. Paul plays a lot of the other instruments on, especially when you get into the later, the early records, it's all, you know, what you see is what you get. But once you get to like Revolver, Rubber Soul, especially like the White Album and stuff, like they're all over the place. Like I think even George might play bass on a couple of, like they switched instruments more than you'd think. Like the Ballad of John and Yoko, I think John's playing guitar on it, but like Paul's playing drums and Paul's playing bass and like Paul's doing everything else. Like John.
Right. And it came down to, especially with Paul, like he was looking for a very specific sound or a very specific thing for each song. And there's a quote from John Lennon where he's talking about how much he just absolutely fucking hated Maxwell's Silver Hammer. Because Paul spent so much time trying to get that hammer sound.
Right.
Hours of him hitting things over and over to try to get that sound. And he just hated it. So, it's that kind of, I don't know if it's perfectionism or if it's just you've got this thing in your head and you're trying to match it up to a real world sound. But yeah, that tended to drive some of them crazy, especially, John.
Yeah, I think I finally finished that one Beatles doc that was on Hulu, the one that Ron Howard did.
I want to see that. I haven't seen that yet.
Do you have Hulu or you don't?
No,
have
I don't. So
it's worth turning on for a month and watching a couple of things. But yeah, that one's pretty good. That's all about their touring years. That goes up and that's just about them touring. So it doesn't go that far into their career because they obviously stopped touring at one point. But it's an interesting slice. That's a good one. And I think we mentioned last time how I have the free month of Showtime that I'm still in the middle of. And I've now watched, I picked Baby Driver a couple of weeks ago, but I watched the Rush doc that's on there. And I think I mentioned that last time. I did watch the Clapton one, The Life in 12 Bars, which
I like
is
that
great.
One.
That one is very good. I watched the one on XTC. I don't know if you're familiar with that band.
No.
They're a British band, and I really liked two or three of their albums. They started as kind of like a punk band, but they evolved into more of a Beatle-like band. That's worth watching, even if maybe you're not a fan. It's worth checking that out, but I enjoyed that one. But yeah, some good music docs on Showtime. So it's worth, if they're still doing that free month, definitely sign up and just watch those ones. But the Clapton one's good. I'm interested because I did buy the Clapton, I think I tweeted it to you or Facebooked it to you, or maybe I just texted it to you, the Clapton autobiography. I don't know if you bought it. I think I did.
And then I forgot about it. So
because I think it was like $2 on sale. I mean, it came out a while ago. Look, if there's a book that I'm even remotely interested, if it's $2, I buy it. Because I'm just like, $2, man. It's like, look, if you go out and you get a drink, like I go out routinely on a Saturday and spend $8.50 on a beer, on one beer, because the town I live in, there's like these upscale bars. So you got to spend like $8.50 to get a beer. I'm like, look, $2 for a book that's going to give me enjoyment for 2 weeks to a month. And I might learn something, a valuable life lesson through, certainly worth $2. So I just buy it if it's that. But I'm curious to read that book now after watching the doc, because I kind of knew about Clapton, but in watching that doc, it's like, wow, man, he was a mess.
Yeah.
He was really a mess. Yeah. I mean, I knew he had a drug problem and I knew he was an alcoholic and all that, but ooh, what's really kind of, I'll say, disturbing about that doc is they have a lot of audio of him kind of backstage and even on stage, like he was a belligerent drunk, man. He was nasty. Like I'm like, I'm surprised he kept his audience through that, because he was just nasty at that point for a long time too.
There's a couple of those that it reminded me of that scene in the Eagles documentary where, Glenn Frey has had it with Felder.
Yeah.
He had had it. And he's on stage. He's like, you suck, Felder. Fuck you. I'm going to kick your ass.
But Henley was, I found Henley to be, not Henley, Glenn Frey to be so, entertaining through all that, though.
Like, yeah, yeah, but it's still, it's like that moment. It's like you didn't realize that that moment existed and that someone captured it.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing with Clapton. You didn't realize that those moments had been captured, and well,
The one that's really shocking is someone had a camera backstage, like a video camera back in the day, and this would have been the 70s, so this would have been on film. You know, they didn't even... Where he's got a knife... And he's like snorting coke off a knife. He's like putting cocaine on a knife and snorting it. And you see it. I'm like, I'm surprised. I mean, I guess, you know, he's, you know, spoiler alert, like Clapton's still around. He straightened his life out and got it together. And he's very, obviously his Crossroads Festival raises a lot of money for addiction treatment. He's got that facility in Antigua, I think it is. And so it's become a thing for him where that's sort of his life.
Well, yeah. And in that documentary, and he's been open about this ever since, but in the documentary, it comes up, you know, it was the death of his son.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That was the catalyst for all the change in his life.
Yeah. That's a tough one to watch at points. Cause it's like, ooh, man, he was, and you learn, it's like, you know, he had I don't want to give the doc away, but like he had very traumatic experiences growing up and all that, but it's very dramatic. And, you know, you walk away from that thinking like, I'm glad he got it together. Cause he was a mess and was not above stealing people's wives. Did it more than once. Did it with George Harrison and George Martin, I think. He was I think he had an affair with George Martin's wife too, or somebody. I don't know. He was not above that. that was Clapton back in the day. But no, I have liked those docs, and I haven't watched them yet, but I'm kind of excited. There's I don't know if it's a Netflix series or if it's from another like cable channel, but I think it's called like Sessions With, but there's four new ones that just popped up the week that we're recording this. And I think it's called In Session With, and they may not be your favorite musicians, but there's one with Moby. There's one with Noel Gallagher, the guy from Oasis. And there's one with Nile Rodgers, who is the guitar player from Chic, who also like guested on a ton of records too. And one with TLC. But I'm curious about those, cause I like Moby, and I find Noel Gallagher, I like a couple of those Oasis albums, and he's always hilarious. Although that'll be one that I will have to turn on subtitles to watch it, cause you could barely understand a word that Noel Gallagher says, even though he's speaking English. Well, they used to do that when they would have interviews with Oasis back in the day, when they would show clips of them on MTV. MTV used to run subtitles, because they knew no one could understand what he was saying. I don't know. He might be better now. I mean, he was probably half drunk at the time too. So he's a thick Manchester accent and probably a little inebriated. He's very slurry, but,
I'd like to see a new reality TV show. That's sort of like The Odd Couple. It's you put two people in an apartment together and just kind of film how they interact. And I'd like it to be Ozzy Osbourne and Keith Richards, because you'd never be able to understand anything either one of them says.
Yeah, that Keith Richards doc is good too. There's that came out a couple of years ago, but that's on Netflix.
Yeah.
There's a pretty good, interesting Keith Richards doc too. The Rolling Stones are an interesting case, because are you a Stones fan, Patrick? I don't know if we've ever really talked about that.
I enjoy their music, and probably their greatest hits is the extent of my Rolling Stones knowledge. I know that one of the first hits that they had was actually written by John and Paul.
Well, Ruby Tuesday, I think, is...
No, they gave I Want to Be Your Man.
Oh, right. That came...
I think to them first.
That Beatles book that I read, Dreaming the Beatles, the one I mentioned on the Andy Weir episode, I think there's a bit about that where they said, like, well, we weren't going to give them one of our good songs. I think they made a big show of it where John and Paul like sort of pretended to write the song like in front of them, but they actually already had it. They were like pretending like they were just coming up with it on the spot.
That's funny.
Yeah. But no, Stones are interesting to me because I've never been interested in them at all. And in the past couple of years, like, I think it's imminent, not imminent, but it's going to happen someday where I'll get into them, because maybe it's just from getting into older music or whatever, what have you, but I hear their albums now. I hear songs here and there, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of interesting. I I feel like I feel like I'm 6 months away from, you know, picking all the Rolling Stones album as my pick of the week at some point. It hasn't happened yet, but I feel like it will happen at some point. But yeah, for me, I've never really, I think it's that, you know, classic Beatles versus Stones, and I'm totally a Beatles guy, not a Stones guy. You know?
I think that's if you're interested in what I've been listening to lately, I've been going back through Elton John's catalog.
Hmm.
And Elton John's Honky Cat is one of the first CDs I ever bought for myself that, like, at the time I was buying the Beatles a lot. And the first thing I ever bought that wasn't a Beatles thing on CD was Honky Cat.
Okay.
And so that's always held like a special place in my heart. And I've kind of gone through some of his older stuff, listening to it, and before the double albums, you know, like Blue Moves and Honky Cat and stuff like that. But then I also have been listening to, you know, Captain Fantastic and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and
just
all his early stuff.
I was going to say, is this all like 70s Elton John, or does it get beyond that?
Yeah.
He's another one where never got into him, but.
Oh, Tumbleweed Connection's another good one.
Yeah, but I'm sure it'll happen someday. Because again, when I hear the non-singles, I'm like, that's interesting. Because I know with like Madman Across the Water, like I feel like that like kind of almost borders on progressive rock or something.
Yeah, it does. It's very good.
Yeah, so I feel like that's, you know, I don't know. There's so much music out there that it's.
He definitely had some what we would call concept albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were just really good, and you know, songs flow into each other, and I think Tumbleweed Connection was his take on a Western country mm-hmm. song kind of CD or album at the time. So that one, there's some songs on there that kind of get redone by country people every once in a while, which is interesting.
Yeah.
His connection to country is always very interesting to me. Like they recently did a tribute to him and to Bernie.
Right.
And it was almost all country singers.
Right.
Doing his songs. And I know when they did the 40th anniversary or 50th anniversary, 40th probably of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, a bunch of country bands did covers of his songs. And I enjoy those. Those are really good. If you get the deluxe album on Spotify, if you just, you know, like that album, it'll give you digitally remastered versions of his songs, and then after you get all the covers the country people did.
Yeah.
Like the band Perry and Zach Brown Band and some other people. So that's all been good stuff. So I've been doing a lot of Elton John here recently, just listening to his songs.
Cool. Yeah. I've been listening to surprisingly a lot of jazz lately. I've been, because that History of Jazz book that I got, I've been listening to it, but I actually took the physical book out of the library because they're talking about specific recordings. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take the book out of the library. I bet there's an appendix in the back that lists all of these. I'm going to go through and I'm going to go to my Google Play Music, or if one were to use Spotify, you could do the same thing. And I've just been going through that appendix and making one giant playlist called The History of Jazz.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm sort of going back and forth. Like I listen to the audiobook and then I've just been listening to this old, and I will say the very early jazz stuff, it's hard to listen to because recording was so primitive at the time.
Right.
It doesn't really catch. So, you know, you have like the Duke Ellington Big Band or Louis Armstrong or something, like they're really the 20s. Well, it's like you'd have this band of, you know, anywhere from 8 to 20 pieces, and there would be one microphone that they would all be playing around. Well, guess what? It's hard to capture all that. I mean, and there's like very little bass on it because it couldn't capture. Because I think at the time, I feel like this is like pre-tape where it went like right to vinyl or so, or right to some, I don't know. I'd have to look up how the actual technology was, but it was almost.
I believe it wrote it to a master disc.
Yeah, it was and it couldn't pick up bass. It wasn't, the technology had not gotten there yet. So those old recordings are hard to listen to because it's very, the frequency spectrum is very narrow. You're missing a lot of it.
But what's funny is that was like my grandmother's music.
Oh, sure.
And so I listened to that back in the day when I was a kid, when she was living with us, and she had no problem with the fact that there was no bass. Mm-hmm. That was just the music that she remembered from when she was a kid listening on the radio.
Right. Well, by the time you get to like the 40s, it improves significantly, the recording quality. They probably had more than one mic by that point.
Yeah, but you got to remember it. Like, my mom was born in 41.
Right.
So when my grandmother was a kid, that was 20s, the 20s and the 30s, you know, when she was probably a teenager. So that is the music that she listened to on the radio. Mm. So that's what she was used to. And that's what I remember listening to. Like, she used to go to places like Cracker Barrel where they would sell the old timey radio stuff. Mm. And she would buy those.
Right, right.
And play those a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's what I love about having a Spotify or Apple Music or whatever you listen to, because I can do that. Like, I wouldn't go out and buy all these albums, but I can make this giant playlist. And now I really dig a lot of this stuff. Now I've like really been into it for the past month. And like I said, it gets, as the recording quality improves, it becomes much more enjoyable to listen to. Because like I said, by the time you get to like the 40s and you get like Benny Goodman and all that kind of stuff, it's...
Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, these were all really great, great big bands.
Oh yeah, so by the time you get to that stuff, they were able to capture that a lot better. So it's you're getting what it would have... You're getting closer to what it would have been like if you actually saw that band live. But it's great. The book is great just for giving you like historical context. And what's really surprising is, even if you don't know much about jazz, and I don't, other than what I learned in school and a couple of other books that I've read over the years, it's really surprising if you recognize the big names in jazz, like some of the ones we just mentioned, it's surprising how much they crossed each other's paths. You know, you have these huge names and they all... You know, Miles Davis, when he was really young, played with Charlie Parker. And, you know, it's like they all, it was kind of like an apprenticeship almost, where when they were young, they would, you know, be in Duke Ellington's band and then they would go on and do their own thing. And then, you know, it was sort of, that was the way the system kind of ran. So it's sort of funny, all these sort of legendary names, a lot of them knew each other and played with each other more than you'd think.
There's also a couple, if you look on Spotify specifically, is where I know that they exist. There's a couple of B.B. King jazz albums.
Where B.B. King is playing in a jazz style?
Where he's playing jazz with, I want to say, who did you just mention?
We said Duke Ellington, Count Basie.
No, you just mentioned a couple right now.
A couple of...
Marsalis Winton?
Well, there's... Well, I didn't mention them, but there is Winton and Bradford Marsalis.
I can't remember. It went in one ear and out the other, but you just mentioned someone who played in Duke Ellington.
Oh, like Miles Davis.
Miles Davis. It might be B.B. King Miles Davis album. But there's like a couple of those where he's playing New Orleans jazz. He's playing a couple other types of jazz with other bands. Mm-hmm. Like named people that you would know.
Right, right.
And those are some interesting albums.
Yeah. My favorite like B.B. King line that I ever read, like in a guitar magazine, they were like, B.B., how come you don't really play chords? He's like, I pay the guys behind me to play the chords. Yeah, because it's funny. If you ever see B.B. King, and obviously he passed away, but if you ever see clips of him playing, he would sing. He had his guitar. He would sing, play a lick, you know, answer himself on the guitar, then go back to singing. And, you know, he sort of was talking to himself with his guitar. He would just go back and forth.
Yeah.
And he paid the guys behind him to keep the beat going and keep the chords going. And he's like, people are here to see me. No one's here to see me play a G chord, everybody. People want to see me wail. That's what they want to see. And he's right. Like, I don't need to see B.B. King playing a G chord. I want to see him wail. But it's good. It's a good rabbit hole to follow. But that's what I really love about those streaming services, because then you could find somebody that you like, and then you're like, you know, I really like Django Reinhardt. I'm going to go and listen to more of him now. And it's like some, you know, because it's great because you throw all this stuff in a big playlist and you hit shuffle on it, and you know, some of it catches your ear, some of it doesn't. But then you're like, what's this? And then you can find the new thing that you're into. And then you can go and see if there's some YouTube videos of them. And I don't know, we're really like, you know, it's funny because I'm also rereading. I'm a big fan of Chuck Klosterman's books. And he wrote a book called Fargo Rock City, where he's talking about metal. And he said how he found this book was written like 15, 20 years ago. And he found this old videotape on VCR tape on Super Long Play, where they had like 11 hours worth of metal videos that he had recorded.
Oh, wow.
And he was saying how it's like, oh yeah, you're never going to see these videos again. And I'm like, oh, obviously he wrote this pre-YouTube, this thing, because it's like now you could find all this. But I'm like, yeah, you know, he's right. Back when he wrote this, a video that was on MTV, it had a life where it got shown. And then you would, other than maybe a countdown show on VH1 or something, you'd probably never see it again. So YouTube and streaming music has definitely changed things. But anyway, yep. All right, well, there we go. We're at about 50 minutes, nice tight 50 minutes right there. So good stuff there, Patrick, and hope things are going well on your end. Anything you want? Oh, I should mention to people, if you dig our show, back us on Patreon, patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you want to leave our friends with here?
No, I just want Gail to understand that I took her feedback to heart, and we barely talked about Star Wars.
Yes, that was
like
maybe 45 seconds. Notice how we tried desperately not to. And, you know, there was a point where we totally could have just had the rest of the episode be about Star Wars. And I know both of us were trying not to. So that's for you. Yeah.
And I do. I have been listening just to totally blanked on it. I have been listening to Gail's podcast with Piper as well. Intermittently, I'm not religious about it, but I'll grab the episodes and listen to them because they are entertaining and they're talking quite a bit about traveling, which I used to do a lot for my job and kind of travel hacks and stuff like that.
Sweet. All right, everybody, have a great week and we'll see you next time.
Well, I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.